Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the October 1 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Jason Clapp of Risk Management Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
We'll begin as usual by asking what our panelists would like to talk about for the day. We'll start with you, Dan Zwicker.
I would say whether or not we got a decent shot at the seasonal pattern taking hold of an upturn in October, or if this year is going to be a lot different than what it has been, especially last year.
Bill Mayer?
Just the bean market in general, and the questions I've been getting from farmers a lot is, you know, what I do with these extra bushels that get taken out of the field.
And Jason Clapp.
We got some guys starting to bring up the fact that, you know, we need to be paying attention for some things for next year as well. So marketing for the 2016 crop or the crop that's going to go in the ground.
I'm going to start with you because I know Risk Management Commodities has been one of the few that's been bullish most of the season. This thing has gone against you a lot of the season. Can you remain bullish as we get into the harvest season?
Yeah, I think we are. The yield numbers that we continue to hear, especially here lately on corn, the corn numbers seem to be falling off a little bit from around some different places. I was talking to a friend I used to work with up in northern Illinois, and even up there where things are, you know, have been deemed perfect for the year, he was saying he got into a field where it was a zero on one side and a 278 on the other. They were hoping to make a 165 out of the field, and it made 205 last year. So, I think as we continue to get some more data, that we can see the yields come down a little bit more.
Speaking of more data, what is it that anybody's been hearing out of Iowa? They seem to have been very quiet. Most of the analysts on air have not mentioned much about what's happening in Iowa. That either means one of two things, that normally they haven't started yet, and or their yields are so good nobody's bothering to say anything about them at this point. What do we hear? Bill, how about you?
Well, I guess what I've been hearing is I think it's been pretty much reflective of what I've been hearing from Illinois, and that's that the corn is real variable. There's some good corn, some poor corn maybe than what we expected. But on the bean side of things, we've been seeing some real good bean yields. But I think you're right. I think it's been, they're not nearly as far along as we are, for example, here in central Illinois. And, of course, the western part of the state got so much rain there a couple of weeks ago that it just kind of put them behind from the beginning.
Dan, you suggested we should talk about seasonal patterns. Let's stick with corn for the moment. What does its pattern normally look like?
On average, corn will have a tendency to, you know, try to trace out an October low during the first 10 days or so of October, and then it'll have a bounce or so into December, and then depending upon what kind of crop year we're in, then the December futures then has a tendency again to weaken as it goes on into the expiration period around first part of December. So corn, as a rule, is difficult to really get much of a meaningful upturn in corn until you get past that Thanksgiving or that past the December expiration period. And then you can begin to at least see a seasonal pattern of strength as you move on into the spring months. But corn is kind of tricky in here. You can go back and look at a lot of years where you just kind of go sideways until you get harvest complete. But so far it looks like harvest may go faster than everybody thinks, at least the way the weather pattern is shaping up.
If we have a fast harvest, does that mean anything for the seasonal pattern and how quickly it turns?
The quicker you get the crop harvested, the quicker you get it put away, the quicker you're going to have a recovery. That's basically the name of the game. Now, we do know that farmers have a strong cash flow need for money starting anytime in first part of December, and that is the trick. And that's one of the reasons why the market doesn't really catch to the upside until some of that December and January cash flow needs are kind of priced into the marketplace. And, you know, my guess is that farmers don't have much of this crop priced. But the other side of that equation is, at least the people I talk to in Singapore tell me that there is a lot of end users that need to get some inventory on the books here. So that could be, you know, we may have kind of a standoff, and that's just what maybe keeps the market more in a sideways trading range here rather than seeing seasonal pressure as the harvest moves north and west.
Bill, I think it's probably pretty safe to say, given what we've seen in the way of at least in the eastern Corn Belt, and I think into the western Corn Belt too, of lines or lack thereof at the elevators, that there seems to be plenty of storage and that farmers are using their on-farm storage for that which they are forced to take to town. Do they do anything different than to simply store it at the elevator, or should they go ahead and ship that corn, do you suppose?
Well, I guess my feeling is today that if you've got those bushels on the bean side, let's talk about the bean side right now, I think you have to look at the you have to be in perspective, and you got to look at your yields and, you know, look at the price levels that you can get and where does that put you from a profitability standpoint. It's really pretty hard for me to pay storage on beans, to be quite honest with you. Now, that doesn't mean that I want to sell every bean I've got, so if I'm taking everything to the elevator, you know, I'm going to take a different strategy. But if you're talking about overrun beans, it won't fit in the bin. I think you know, as long as we're at the levels that we're at here, you put them into the marketplace. Now, one of the things that seems to be helping a little bit, at least in some parts of the central part of the country here, is that I think there's trains coming in and things like that. They're not getting the beans bought, and we're seeing, I just talked to a guy before I got on the air that's showing some basis pushes, you know, to get some beans bought from the farmer. So, you know, make sure you're aware of where the price levels are at and what you can get from the elevators there. But I think taking cash and putting it into your, you know, trying to think about some of those cash flow needs, Dan was talking about getting that planned out at this point.
Jason, do you have a different perspective on that which has to go to the grain elevator for soybeans?
No, for the guys that we've been talking to, for basically corn and beans both, you know, if it's going to the elevator, we're looking at ways to re-own it, you know, with probably some March call options or maybe even out a little bit further. That way we can get, you know, kind of like Dan said, they're past this window and out into November and December and January when some different things can hit the market and give you reasons to make a little bit of money on a rally if it ever does.
Have you been successful in talking to producers into going ahead and selling across the scale?
Yeah, that hasn't been hard. You know, for us, especially when most of our guys are looking for a re-ownership strategy anyway, at this point. So it's not been a terrible discussion to have.
I suppose we probably ought to take up the grain stocks report for both corn and soybeans very quickly. This would be the last one or the final one for the year. USDA released that earlier in the week. And that number for corn now is at 1.73 billion bushels. They were at 1.732, and they're at 1731 now. Will change probably a little bit with the WASD figures when they're released October the 9th. The soybean number was dropped from its current 210 million. That came out of WASD earlier in September, and then on the 30th day of September, that number dropped to 191 million bushels. What do you think of that number, Dan? And is does it fit with what you think is there?
Well, I mean, at least one thing we know in beans is that all the beans are usually counted because, you know, we either crush them or we export them. Whereas in corn, we have such a big block of it, or 5 billion bushels roughly, is always in the feed area, which is basically just a large residual number, where beans, you know, the market can catch USDA if they're wrong on production or if they're wrong on carrying stocks. And I think the residual number that USDA is using basically tells you that somewhere along the line, either they're overstating production or maybe last year's carry-in was actually smaller than what the 90 million bushels was, or something. But we know, you know, if the survey says we got 190 million bushels to start with, I guess it really doesn't make much difference where those beans went. This is what the number is that we start with. But you know, it does make you wonder. The last couple of years, USDA has had difficulty with the soybean numbers, and you can catch them on that, but you can't catch anything on corn because everything ends up over in the feed and residual years. So there's no, and you can see that what happened yesterday or on Wednesday is that USDA just left corn the same, but they were forced to move the soybean numbers around. But they are what they are. For the life of me, I have problems with USDA's reports simply from a philosophical point of view. I mean, basically, they're just showing the farmer's hand all the time throughout the marketing season, and I just don't see the government reports being beneficial to farmers, but I'm sure I'd get a lot of people to argue with me on that one. I think they're more beneficial to end users, and then they can take advantage of the farmer when they know what the farmer's hand is. So that's why I have a little problem with USDA reports, because I guess I'm from the farmer side of the equation. But I know that it would take major legislation to change anything, and that's not going to happen. So they're here, and we're going to have to live with them.
Well, from my point of view, I wouldn't have anything to talk about on the air very much if we didn't have the USDA reports. How about that?
Well, you're true.
I want to circle back around to the soybean number, Bill, with you, simply because you said we should talk about the extra bushels, and that may be slightly different, your strategy, though I don't think it will be, than the discussion we had about those bushels that had to go to town. So many producers have gone to the field, and they're harvesting really good soybeans, much better than they expected. So do you have something that they ought to do with those extra bushels?
Yeah, and I guess that's what I was saying, Todd, and on the question before. I think, you know, say that you get out there and you've got a 65 bushel yield, for example, here in central Illinois, and currently I think this afternoon we're still around that 870 cash mark for fall, and a lot of the elevators maybe a little bit higher and some and lower than others. I guess my point was, you know, be aware of what that means to your dollars per acre standpoint, and whether, if you've got some forward sales already made and you throw these bushels that you can to get in the bin into that mix and get them sold, does that really hurt you from a profitability standpoint in the long run? And I think it's hard to pay the storage costs on the beans when we're at where we are today. The reports, you know, whether, you know, you look at whether how they got to that point, like Dan said, but the reality is they're saying that we got 100 million bushel more beans on hand September 1st of this year than we had September 1st last year. And that's, you know, I think it has to be looked at from the standpoint of what it is, and that's an estimate as of, you know, September 1st, as close as they can come with it. And it's going to change, and, you know, as we go through the year, the 14 ending stocks ain't going to change, but I'm sure we're going to see a lot of changes in the 15 ending stocks as we go through there based on supplies as well as demand changes. So I just, when I see the yields that's coming in from clients, I guess I'm a little bit hard-pressed to store the beans, especially those overrun beans that I didn't think I had. I got the
okay, so let me make sure that I've got this right, at least on soybeans. Everybody is pretty much of a mind that you go into the elevator and you go ahead and sell them if you have to take them to the elevator. Is that right? Does anybody disagree with that?
I don't think you – I don't think hardly anybody disagrees with that, and that's probably why I might have been wrong. But
well, I wondered about that too.
I mean, that was the deal last year, I think, was to sell $9 beans, and all of a sudden, man, we popped to 10, you know. So I think each individual farmer, it's real hard to give anybody advice at this point in the marketing deal, but I do think there's reason – to always have some kind of ownership, at least price ownership on the books. And, you know, they can work with their individual marketer or their market advisor in having something like that. But as Bill mentioned, you know, investing in storage. And then, as I've mentioned several times, looking at the corn-soybean ratio, I just think soybeans are the weakest commodity, and either corn's going to gain on soybeans or soybeans are going to lose on corn. And I think, but I would still want to retain some type of price ownership because, you know, as soon as we get everything sold, we'll have a major drought in South America. So there's just a lot of moving parts, but I do agree with the general philosophy that if your yields are coming in way better than expected, I've heard a lot of people in Central Illinois coming in best ever, which just scares me to death. It tells me that the USDA report's not going to come down much, it's just going to be real hard for these beans to kind of rally unless we get something, you know, out of South America in here.
Okay, so this is actually where I was working. I thought for sure that I had all three of you on the same page on soybeans. Which brings me to the USDA reports in the month of October. USDA will adjust its acreage if it needs to, that is. Do you think there was much of an opportunity for an adjustment to be large enough to have an impact on the marketplace? And I suppose you have to weigh that, Jason, against the size of the yield or production that we are now bringing in.
Right, especially in the soybean picture, you know, the yield is probably the more influencing factor on the bottom line than any kind of acreage adjustment, unless the acreage adjustment is just huge. So on corn, you can play that a little different, but with the soybeans, it really needs to be a yield adjustment to tighten up that bottom line any amount.
Right now, we're at 47.1 bushels to the acre for the bean yield for this year, and USDA just lowered, I think, last year's yield to 47.5. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So we had a pretty good bean yield last year. Do you really think that the bean yield can go up very much?
I don't. But like we've said, we've been kind of bullish, you know, based on lower production numbers all year. I just, you know, with the way that the crop condition reports came in all summer, you know, by a fair amount lower than anything from last year, plus you've got all the excessive rains that we've had that have stunted production numbers, and I think Bill hit the word perfectly earlier. It's, to me, it's variability. I just don't see near record potential for yield when everyone's talking about how variable things are. You know, when we did record yields last year, everything was uniform. You know, the bad ground got the best yields it's ever had, and the good ground did good too. This year, it's going to be a different story in our eyes.
So, do you think acreage will adjust? For soybeans?
Yeah, I would expect one.
All
You know, the size and scope of it, I guess nobody's really pretty sure, but probably throw a guess out there, you know, 1 million acres or so.
That'd be a pretty good size adjustment. What do you think, Bill?
I think that would be bigger than what I would expect, but, you know, it's a wild card that's out there. There's no doubt about it. I think if you get the carryout down, you know, it's 191 there on this year's crop. If you look at next year's, I think on the September report, they had that carryout at
450.
You know, it's got to be a pretty substantial acreage drop to get anybody real excited about it. I think, you know, they're going to be paying attention, but if it starts to move in that direction, I mean, if you look at how much we changed the carryout numbers this year from, you know, September of 14 to, you know, this last report here on the stocks, it was pretty substantial. So I guess I find it hard to believe they're going to drop the acreage that much. Maybe a 500,000 acres would be my thought at the top end.
All right, then that brings me to next year. And, Jason, this was on your list of things to talk about. Is it already time to think about what to do with next year's crop?
Definitely something to keep your finger on the pulse of, you know, mainly from the thought that for the last couple of years we've spent more calendar time probably underwater than we have at profitable price levels. So, you know, it's one of those things. We're sitting here and we're starting to formulate plans out of our shop on, okay, you know, what price levels are we going to look for? And really probably the bigger thought is how big of a chunk are we going to do and how are we going to do it? And this year we may look at, you know, swinging a big stick early and probably using more put options than anything just to try and give us some flexibility as we go through the year. Because, you know, something a lot of people haven't really talked about lately is it's getting pretty dry around here, and there's been substantial talk over the last 2 weeks about going from this cool, wet weather pattern to a hotter, drier one into next year.
So when you do a substantial chunk, I'm wondering how hard that is to manage for producers, both financially and to actually get them to do it. The substantial chunk they normally would think about, Bill, is with crop insurance, and that's a much easier trigger to pull, but they don't get to pull it until we get to the month of March.
Yeah, and from the standpoint of the soybeans, we've got a really flat market, so that kind of makes it difficult to, you know, when you look out from this year to next year, there's really basically the same price that we're looking at, a little bit less in the cash market because you got wider basis levels out there. So I think a person has to be a little bit patient here through the harvest season, but you have to be ready to grab opportunities when they come. I don't see anything from the, you know, crop insurance standpoint as far as trying to lock those numbers in, you know, ahead of time right now that really would make a lot of sense. I do think that it's going to be interesting as we come out of fall and go into January on, you know, what people's discussions are as far as acreage, because, you know, I think as we talk about, some of these bean yields are pretty good, and when you look at that profitability, it's almost, if you put some of the numbers that some of the guys are coming out with, points towards beans more than it does corn next year. I think on corn, we haven't really talked about corn a lot, but I think on corn it's kind of a different story. I think there's so much variability in the corn that I think you have to be a little bit patient even on the old crop here as far as getting additional sales on right now.
All right. Well, tell me a little bit more about that, each of you, I think. And do you have other options, Bill, that you think they ought to discuss, think about on old crop corn or the corn they're actually putting in the bin at this point and harvesting?
Yeah, of course, it depends on the situation the guy's in, how much forage sales he's got already, and, you know, what his percentage sales are. But what I'm seeing is some pretty decent basis levels out there in some areas, most areas really, as far as the corn goes this fall. And I kind of like the idea of a basis contract to, you know, avoid paying the storage cost, but still maintaining ownership of the crop. And another alternative would be, as Jason had mentioned on the soybeans, would be a possibility on corn as well, and that's selling the crop and coming back in and getting some ownership back with the call options. I kind of like the idea of the basis contract, I guess, would be more of my favorite on the corn. So, you know, your basis levels will improve. You're going to have a better basis in January versus in March, for example, than you have right now. You have to understand that. It's got to be used in the right situation. And if you're in an area, say in the Western Belt, where the basis levels are pretty wide right now, pretty weak, I think, you know, it's not the tool to use. But in some of these central Corn Belt areas where they're pretty strong basis levels for the middle of 1st of October, I think that's a good tool to use.
Jason, you have any thoughts?
Kind of two different strategies to get somewhat of the same long position. The reason we like to go ahead and sell the cash and re-own with call options is just for the simple fact that by doing that, we develop a minimum price. You know, we know we're not going to get less than X, as opposed to where a basis contract would still leave you open to a, some negative futures movement. Same ideas basically from us for corn and beans. And it sounds like Bill's kind of talking the same game. So,
oh, Dan, tell me you're in the same game, and then we've got trouble all over.
I guess I would be willing to be patient and see if we could get a little more meaningful recovery, rally, you know, some kind of seasonal strengthening here during October, or maybe even in early November, I guess. Because I do think that there's a lot of new stories being put up. Farmers are going to be generally tight holders of that. And, you know, I think there is some demand out there that's going to have to come off the bench. And so I guess I'm into the camp that I do think you should be selling rallies. The question is how long do you wait before you give up on a rally? But I would at least sit through the October report for now and see what that tells us and how the market performs. A long time ago, I did a study when I was with ADM, and when markets close higher during the month of September, you have a pretty good probability that you're going to see some October, November price strength. So I guess I would kind of use that as kind of a guidepost, at least for right now. But I don't believe we got the horsepower to do a repeat of last year, simply because we just don't have the shorts in the market like we did a year ago.
Time for a final word from each of you. We'll start with you, Jason Clapp, from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Well, I like Bill's comment there on strength and basis, and I think it's one of those that make sure you stay in touch with your local merchandiser almost to a daily standpoint, because this basis numbers, once they satisfy their need, those basis numbers will go away and go away in a hurry. So that's one thing to probably try and stay on top of as you're riding around in the combine.
Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County.
October is the averaging month for the fall price on the crop insurance. For those of you that are in those areas where you do have some poor yields, and I know there's some out there, make sure you know where you're at as far as that average price and where you have to be for a potential claim to come in. And if, right now, if we just stayed where we were at today, you'd have to have about a 10% lower price on your corn, for example, and about the same on beans. I'm sorry, you'd have to have about a 10% lower yield on corn and beans to be in the area of claim. So that's kind of where we stand today. But, of course, it's going to change as we go through October.
And finally, Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas.
Well, don't have a whole lot to add. I just say continue to be a safe operator out there. We've got beautiful weather. There's no hurry on anything. But I do think that you do need to, you know, keep alert and stay on top of price rallies and see how this fall plays out over the next 60 days.
That wraps up this October 1 edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists today included, again, Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Jason Clapp of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana. And from right here in Champaign County, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.